It's time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, January 17th. I'm Gavin Dahl, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. The town of Carbondale received 8 applications for the open position on the Board of Trustees: Jim Breasted, Beth Broom, Michael Durant, Sarah Johnson, Rebecca Mahler, Doc Phillip, Erica Sparhawk, and April Spaulding. We'll continue to cover the story as it develops. As part of his ongoing series on immigrant rights in the Valley, KDNK News intern Raleigh Burley sat down with Angie Davlin, the senior project manager for the RE1 Roaring Fork School District, to discuss community efforts in support of local immigrant families.
As a school district, we really honor the goal of serving all students. And to do that, we've done a couple things in the past few weeks. So one thing is that we've heard from a lot of our families, and we know that there are families that are worried and nervous and scared out there. So a few weeks ago, our board passed a resolution committing to ensure safe haven to all of our students. And you can access that online. But essentially, it says that all of our students have a legal right to an education, regardless of any differences, including their immigration status. And we wanted to just outline a number of ways that we want to, you know, celebrate and respect diversity and continue to create a really strong sense of belonging for all students and families. Another thing that we're doing as a district is we're hosting a series of meetings where different community members and organizations can come together and share things that they've been hearing and seeing from the organizations that they represent or the students that they serve.
What types of organizations have been meeting?
We have really diverse participation. So we have members from the Aspen Community Foundation. We have representatives from local nonprofits like the Buddy Program and English in Action. We have people from Colorado Mountain College. We have teachers and administrators, principals. We have a number of faith-based organizations, including the Aspen Jewish Congregation, the local Universal Unitarian Church here, Catholic Charities. We really have a great turnout from a pretty wide spectrum of organizations throughout the Valley. A Valley Settlement Project, Manaus Fund is there as well. And all those people are sharing things that they've heard on the ground from working with different families and sharing resources.
Do you think that that initiative, bringing together not only the school district, but churches, a lot of faith-based organizations, do you think that's unique to our community? Or do you imagine that's happening all over Colorado and the rest of the United States right now?
I think we have a really great climate in Colorado, but our valley may be uniquely committed to working together across different sectors and to ensure that, you know, community members here feel welcome. We've heard a lot of great stories, though, from other school communities and other towns who are doing similar things.
And is that resolution and that you made in response to something that had been happening previously, or did you feel like it was important to reinstate that written proclamation so that people knew that they were in a safe place?
That's a good question. You know, nothing in the board resolution is really anything that we hadn't been doing before as a school district, but we wanted to make sure that we put all those pieces together so that families would, you know their rights and know that they could feel safe in schools and they could feel celebrated and honored regardless of any difference that they might have.
And how is the turnout for those meetings that you've been holding?
We're pretty good. We've had, you know, about 30 community organizations and members that show up, and we have a larger email list that's about 100 people strong so far. And it's a very active an interested group. So I'm encouraged to see it growing over time instead of dwindling. And, you know, we add new people every week.
And so every week you're meeting?
We meet monthly. So we've met 3 times so far.
Okay. And will that continue indefinitely?
I think we'll continue it as long as there's momentum. We've been kind of in a listening phase so far, really wanting to respect the importance of learning what people are feeling and what people are seeing and hearing before we jump quickly to action. But I think we're kind of at the point where we're feeling like there are some actions that people might want to start taking or that organizations might want to take to ensure that they're making it known that they're wanting to serve all people or, you know, putting certain protections in place.
I've heard a lot about increases maybe in children sort of like overtly expressing a certain racism. Of course, like during our whole election cycle. Our country was exposed to a lot of hateful speech. Do you feel like there have been instances appearing in our school districts of children maybe like more bullying, more race-related discrimination?
You know, I've seen things in our local papers here in the Valley where there's been instances of hate speech or hate symbols that have been published in the news. But I haven't heard yet of any specific instances of discrimination. What we have heard a lot of is that families are fearful, worried, you know, making plans to leave the country for different reasons. And so I think that there's still a long way to go to have all people feel like they're part of a safe community, even in the absence of stories of, you know, overt discrimination. One thing we heard today, too, was that fear and anxiety might have lessened, but people are sort of in a holding pattern. So we're just sort of waiting to see what will happen when the new administration comes on board and, you know, what new policies and changes will result. You know, we're really gathering information and gathering resources and trying to get that out to everyone in the community, especially people that might be least likely to access that information in other ways. And I know that there are other organizations, immigration law firms, and gatherings of, you know, other supportive individuals who are holding meetings and trying to help educate people about what their rights are. So we see these groups as a way to share information, and we welcome anyone to join the email list or join for those meetings, and we'd be happy to have them.
That was KDNK News intern Raleigh Burley interviewing Angie Davlin, Senior Project Manager for RFSD. The school board passed their safe haven resolution back on December 7th. Angie's group hasn't picked a date for their next meeting, but if you're interested in attending, you can email Angie at adavlyn@gmail.com. Last week, amid a flurry of activity in the new Congress related to health coverage, Senators Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota introduced a symbolic amendment urging the federal government to allow Americans to buy pharmaceutical drugs from Canada to save money. The Senate voted 52-46 against the amendment. Both of Colorado's senators, Democrat Michael Bennett and Republican Cory Gardner, voted no. I reached out to each of their press secretaries on Friday, and Lori Cipriano in Senator Bennett's office called me back and then followed up with this statement. Quote, Michael appreciates and shares your listeners' concerns about rising drug prices. This week's non-binding amendment would not have promised lower prices, but would have opened up risk to unsafe or counterfeit medications. He believes we lower prices by allowing the government to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies under Medicare Part D. He also believes we need more accountability and was one of nine senators who voted to take away all marketing rights from drug companies that are found guilty of fraud. However, the FDA does not currently have authority to oversee the safety and effectiveness of drugs imported from Canada or any other country. If the FDA cannot guarantee the safety of our prescription drugs, we run the risk of importing counterfeit medications with dangerous ingredients. For instance, in 2008, more than 100 Americans died from taking an imported blood thinner. When the FDA inspected drugs that U.S. consumers thought they were buying from Canadian pharmacies, many of the medications they thought were Canadian were actually imported from other countries. Michael has supported stronger oversight of the global pharmaceutical supply chain and has worked on it over the past 6 years, including drafting track and trace legislation that is still being implemented. He believes we must continue to work on lowering healthcare costs, particularly for prescription drugs, but that we need to do it while ensuring consumer safety. End quote. Senator Bernie Sanders called safety concerns laughable, saying, quote, if we can import vegetables and fish and poultry and beef from all corners of the earth, please don't tell me that we cannot bring in from Canada and other major countries name brand prescription drugs of some of the largest corporations in the world, end quote. As I read up on this over the weekend, it looks like most drugs imported from Canada are manufactured here in the U.S. They're cheaper in Canada because the government there negotiates the price down. When the Affordable Care Act was being crafted in 2009, Democrats blocked importation of drugs because they feared it would cause Big Pharma to oppose the ACA. Hundreds of constituents who commented on Senator Bennett's Facebook post about the vote over the weekend point to his large financial contributions from drug companies. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, Senator Bennett accepted more than $250,000 in campaign contributions from PACs and individuals with ties to pharmaceuticals and health products in the last election cycle alone, seventh most overall in the United States Senate. Read more at opensecrets.org. Senator Cory Gardner voted no as well, but he does not receive very much money from Big Pharma. KDNK has not received a response to our inquiry sent Friday to Senator Gardner's press secretary. But other Republicans voted yes on the amendment, which suggests this is not the last we'll hear from the U.S. Senate this year about the high cost of pharmaceutical drugs. President Obama is calling on public lands agencies to be more inclusive and has designated three new national monuments while expanding two others. Eric Gladys reports.
President Obama signed a first-ever memorandum to help guide agencies as they work to make public lands more inclusive for all Americans. Jess Ward with the Colorado-based group CityWild points to recent efforts in Congress to sell off public lands and argues, without a broad base of support that goes beyond their traditional white backpacking crowd, the nation is at risk of losing valuable natural resources.
We need to make sure that all people, regardless of their walk of life or their background or their history, feel as equally as invested in these public lands so we don't run the risk of losing them and losing a big part of our national heritage and pride.
The memorandum will ensure people of all colors and creeds are engaged in the development of future public lands policies. Under the Antiquities Act, Obama also expanded national monuments in California and Oregon and named three civil rights era monuments in the South. Carolyn Finney, a member of the National Park System Advisory Board, says the president's actions can help the country move forward by addressing the importance of diversity head on.
That people are going to have to take risks, that people are going to have to be willing to be uncomfortable, to stretch outside their comfort zone, to engage with stories and or people and ways of thinking about our public lands that we might not have done 50 and 100 years ago.
Ward says the civil rights era monuments will help protect America's rich history without shying away from the blemishes and pain.
Instead of being seen as, oh, that's bad, we want to hide from that history, seeing them as beacons of resilience and points of growth, and that those are outdoor activities too.
For KDNK, I'm Eric Gladys.
Use of the Antiquities Act has been opposed in the past by President-elect Trump's nominee for Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke.